Hello, and welcome to episode 69 of the Movie Marathoners podcast, part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mati, and joining me today are Rosa Parra and Catherine Gonzalez, the women behind the Latin Lens podcast. Welcome back to the podcast, both of you. Thank you so much for joining me. How's everyone's weekend?
It's good. Thanks for having us back.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having us. It's good. Good. Can't complain.
Yeah. I know we originally had planned to do this episode like the week after the election results. So I was going to be like, oh, it's probably everyone's probably in such a better mood than they were last week. But we've got a little time to sit on that now. So
yeah, now we're just exhausted.
Yeah. Now it's just time to sleep for the winter and then hopefully
recuperate. Yeah.
So you guys both last joined me on the podcast to review the live action Mulan. That somehow feels both like last week and also like 3 years ago. But regardless, that was a great conversation. And I would definitely recommend the listeners check that out if they haven't, especially because Mulan comes out to Disney Plus next month, I believe, for free. So definitely give that a listen. But until then, this week, we will be discussing the latest Sofia Coppola film to hit Apple TV Plus. This is On the Rocks. So as usual, we'll warm up with our spoiler-free thoughts on the film, then we'll run into spoiler territory where we can talk freely about the film. And finally, we'll finish with our point two section where we talk about what else we've been watching. So let's start with a synopsis of On the Rocks. A young mother reconnects with her larger-than-life playboy father on an adventure through New York. On the Rocks stars Rashida Jones, Bill Murray, and Marlon Wayans. It is, of course, written and directed by Sofia Coppola.
Oh my gosh, do you look beautiful.
You live.
How's your mom's hip?
Good, thanks.
Good. He thinks you're my girlfriend.
Grace.
Been busy?
Yeah. Dee's traveling with clients all the time, and I'm just the buzzkill waiting to schedule things. Just, I'm so stuck.
So Dean's going away a lot, huh? On business trips?
Dad.
Raise your hand if that sounds fishy.
He's not like you. He's a good guy, a great dad.
Sure, it's nature. Males are forced to fight, to dominate, and to impregnate all females.
Maybe he's just not interested in me anymore.
Impossible. For women that are most beautiful between the ages of 35 and 39.
Great, so I have many months left.
Okay, so On the Rocks was released on Apple TV Plus on October 23rd of 2020. So we are a little late on this one. Part of that was because I wanted to do Halloween-themed content in October, and then we also had some scheduling issues. But I've been really excited to talk about this film with you two because it was my very first Sofia Coppola film when I watched it for the first time. And then since then, I've been watching all of Sofia Coppola's filmography. And then after that, I rounded it out with a second viewing of On the Rocks. So I kind of get the experience of both with and without the context of her entire filmography to talk about this with. And I think that's important because I think many of her films have many similarities, and it's really interesting to see her explore similar themes over the course of what's now a 20-plus year film career. But before we talk about that, Rosa, this was your first Sofia Coppola film, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on the Rocks?
Just putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was a well done film. It just feels like a very lighthearted movie about the relationship between a daughter and her father. And overall, again, I'm coming at this with just this being my first Coppola film. So I have no idea what her style is or any, I can't, there's nothing for me to compare it with. So that's going to be, it's going to be very interesting to hear both of you talk about this in comparison to her other films. But in general, I thought it was an okay film, average film that I might be bold in saying this, but if it were probably another director behind it, I don't know how it would have been received. So, yeah, in general, I thought it was okay. It's just something light. It was interesting to see the daughter-father relationship, and just another painful reminder of the pre-COVID era and how just going out and just, out these journeys and everything. So, yeah, I just thought it was okay.
Okay, so kind of a tepid response, but does this film excite you to see more of her films, or are you like, eh?
No. I'm more of like, okay. If there's anything, if this is the way her films go, more of like intimate, like nicely paced, but kind of films with, I don't know. I had some issues with this movie, but I don't know if that's the way her other films are. And I feel really bad for saying this because I'm very supportive of female directors, and I'm very ashamed to admit that this is my first Sofia Coppola film. But yeah, after watching this film, I am not running out there to watch the rest of her filmography.
Okay. So, Catherine, you're a little bit on the other side of the spectrum. I think we were just talking and you said that you've seen all but one of her other films. Before we talk about some of those films, what are your thoughts overall on The Rocks?
Yes. So I, Russa, don't worry about your feelings because I actually felt kind of the same way. And it's funny because I think Sofia Coppola was probably one of my first female director. I started watching her films back in like high school. And they were always like the ones I've seen. I know I always took away something like, oh my, wow, like a little bit wowed, or like, there was always some like insightful thing that I would ponder about for like, for a long time and still do. I still look at her earlier work as like, I don't know, just in terms of like my cinematic, interest and stuff, like she was very pivotal in that sense. And so then this film, when I saw it, I enjoyed it. I think, yeah, it is light. It is, I like the father-daughter aspect of it. I think there is some tidbits of like insightfulness mm-hmm. on like the relationship aspect, and also kind of this, like this breaking a stereotype of like, especially now in our 2020 world, and also just like in culture today, and myself included, always thinking about cynical first and, thinking the worst thing possible instead of giving people the benefit of the doubt. Although there's pros and cons to that. But this film kind of leaned into more of like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be so cynical, and, not everyone is, a horrible person. mm-hmm. And so I liked that. But other than that, yeah, I think it was okay. And I honestly don't know if I could say that if I would have just watched it without knowing who it is, I don't think I could have pinpointed that it was a Sofia Coppola film, which I don't know. I also think, given her other filmography, I can also see it in terms of like, you know what, I actually kind of liked this from her mm-hmm. and also in like both way, like I guess at a pro and con, because I was thinking like, oh, Sofia Coppola film, I got to like brace myself. Right.
Yeah.
And then when it wasn't that way, I was like, you know what, I like that. And maybe that's the way she feels, like maybe she just wanted to make a nice little kind of, a fun film and not have it to mean so much. Like, I know that sounds bad. I'm sure no one wants to say like it doesn't mean so much, but after a long career, maybe she just wanted to kind of make this sort of film too. And I think that's okay. But it definitely felt like a departure, and I'm mixed on whether, it's good or bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely more, or I guess less ambitious, I would say, than some of her other films. Like many of her other films are a little more bold with some of their filmmaking styles and the more directorial and creative choices in some of those films, even mm-hmm. the ones that are, you could see as being a very quiet story, like Somewhere has a lot of things yeah. going on for it. And On the Rocks is a bit more of a straightforward kind of thing. But I think Rosa and Kat, both of your opinions are what I've heard for the most part, right? Like a lot of people enjoy it, but it's nothing special. And I think I'm actually probably a little more positive than that. I did really enjoy it. And I thought that what made it enjoyable to me was that there was sort of that feeling of being one of those movies where you're kind of just existing and looking inward and reflecting on the characters, which is what Sofia Coppola is very, very good at, and what, you know, her films like Lost in Translation do really well. But then there's also a kind of driving plot that is more important maybe to me than some viewers, but I really like when a movie has a destination in a way that some of her other films don't. So I really enjoyed it. I'm not here to say that it's like the best Sofia Coppola film or anything like that, but I had a lot of fun with this one. So Rosa, I'm going to go back to you and just ask if you noticed if there was anything like that was a distinct directorial stamp in this movie, or was it to you really just another kind of rom-com-ish film? And specifically, you mentioned that you don't know how people would respond to this if it was from a another director. Do you mean that people would be more positive on it because they wouldn't have kind of the expectation of a Sofia Coppola film? Or do you think that people are being too nice to it because it's a Sofia Coppola film?
Interesting. I don't see any specific trademark or any like stamp, Coppola stamp in it. But yet again, I don't know what would be
right.
her stamp. So I don't think I can accurately answer that question. So yeah, I do think that maybe it is getting a bit more loved and perhaps more embraced because it is a Sofia Coppola film. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know how her films, I don't know her style. I don't know what she's inclined, what narratives and stories is she more inclined to tell. So I really don't know. I'm just viewing this as another film. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was just okay.
Yeah. I mean, definitely after watching a lot of her films back to back to back, as I did, you do notice a lot of things that she's really interested in on. And one of them to me that is kind of a part of this is the idea of characters that are a little more introspective and introverted than more traditional characters, especially in like, you know, rom-coms or things. So Rashida Jones's character, and I can't remember her character, which I guess is maybe an indictment on that character for not being particularly memorable, but she's very reserved and she keeps her emotions held tight and she's not a loud, active character. She's more kind of toned down and just a little lost in life. And that's very similar to Marie Antoinette and Bill Murray's character in Lost in Translation and certainly whatever the guy's name is in Somewhere. So that's something that I think she really likes to play around with. And in a lot of ways, this is, which I've heard before, is this is almost Lost in Translation light. So just not quite as good as that movie. Catherine, would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I guess so. I think that it's just like a progression, like you said, and I think it's some of the films I haven't seen Lost in Translation in a while, but I remember watching it and thinking like, oh wow, that was, you know, so good. I do think, while I did say, I guess I do seem like I'm mixed on it, I do think that knowing her filmography, I think maybe does kind of help make this like, it sucks though, because like if it's standing alone, like, you know, if you're barely experiencing it for the first time, like Rosa, like if it's not leaving like an impression, I don't know what that says about, you know, this film.
Right.
But if you do know her work, I guess you can kind of see where she's coming from too. And I guess I've sort of grown up with her work in a way. And this felt like a progression of that too. Like, you know, Rashida Jones's character is, you know, 30s and, you know, dealing with her parents. And like, I feel like I'm in the same boat as well, you know, like that sort of thing. And so, yeah, sort of like the journey and the exploration, like sort of like Lost in Translation. I can see that, but it's kind of hard to kind of put those together, because that was like also a different kind of film scene, you know, when that came out. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to kind of say that this is a lighter version, but this, I don't know. I think it's different. And I agree with your assessment of like what you said about her, like these characters, like I think maybe on the surface, if you look at it, it can seem like it's just like, eh. But if you look at it a little bit more deeply and like, you know, having, I'm very introspective as well. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why I was thinking like her movies have always made me think, you know, about certain things in my life. And this one, it did get me thinking a little bit about my relationships and stuff, but I don't know, maybe at first glance it doesn't. And then I need to watch it again, possibly. But, I think it's unfair to just directly compare it to Lost in Translation, especially since that film is probably looked upon fondly by a lot of people, you know? So I'm not a fan of directly comparing things like that, but you kind of have to see the progression of it. And I guess, I don't know. I know that's like a wishy-washy answer, but that's how I feel about it.
No, I mean, that's a good point to clarify that, like, just because she did Lost in Translation doesn't mean that it's fair to directly assess this. And of course, this is in a completely different time in her life. And obviously, Lost in Translation is not a streaming movie. So I think one of the things that this movie does really well is it kind of, like you're saying, is very light. So it kind of opens itself up and just lets you simmer in it. And it's pretty short. So you're just kind of experiencing it. And it's not asking you to, hey, let's brace for a whole bunch of teens committing suicide, like in The Virgin Suicides or something, right? But I think one of the things that maybe Lost in Translation and some of her other films do better is the finale's a little more of an emotional gut punch in some of those films, particularly Lost in Translation. And I think that the weakest part of this film is its ending. And I'm sure we can talk a little bit about that. But another thing that I really like about this is that it kind of grapples with this idea of who your parents are and whether those people are actually flawed people and what that means for your relationship with them. Because we get this Bill Murray character who I think is the standout. It's Bill Murray, so it's not super insightful or anything, but he's such an amazing presence and it's so fun to be around him and stuff. But then you kind of get this other side of him where he's like actually kind of a bad person. And I really enjoyed how the film grappled with that. Rosa, what were your thoughts on the Bill Murray performance?
Yeah, he's the best thing of this film. He kept my attention and he kept my whatever little intrigueness I had in the film. It was because of his performance and who he was and his relationship with his daughter. His charisma is just amazing to watch on screen. And there's particular scenes that I can see Bill Murray actually getting away with, especially I'm pretty sure we'll get into it in the spoilers discussion. But that police sequence when he gets pulled over by the police, certainly one of my favorite scenes in the entire film. But yeah, his performance is perhaps what makes this film watchable for me. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm sounding very negative towards it, or perhaps not as particularly liking the film a lot, but yeah, his performance, it's what makes this film watchable to me. And I like the fact that we have his character being complex, being in this area where he's trying to have this relationship with his daughter, but yet at the same time he's dealing with his own persona and who he is and his idea and his worldviews, which a lot of us don't particularly agree with.
Yep.
But I think I'm always drawn to complex characters because those characters to me seem the most realistic. They seem more relatable and more genuine to me. So again, because his character is this way is perhaps why I'm more drawn to it. But yeah, the best thing in this film is him.
Yeah, he's a very real feeling character. Like, you know people like this. And then, I mean, to an extent, my dad, he reminds me a lot of my dad, just some of his little tics. And my dad is not, you know, offensive with some of the way that he treats women or anything like that. I want that to be on the record. But, you know, sometimes he listens to my podcast. But I do feel that, like, some of just how just immediately friendly he is with people and how he can just like make conversation with anybody is just, I felt like I was a kid again when Rashida Jones just had to like deal with her father sitting there and being embarrassed to her core as he's like talking to the waitress or talking to the police officer, or the people in Mexico. All of it is, I thought that he was just such a well-realized character.
Yeah.
Catherine, did you think that Bill Murray was the best part?
I do think he definitely is the highlight. And I think that also stems from their relationship, probably, you know, him working with Sofia Coppola previously and probably having that, you know, shorthand to kind of really dive into like a character like this. But I also have a soft spot for Rashida Jones. I really love her. So I also think that she's always, you know, I love seeing her in, you know, in like a, this kind of role, especially with, against, you know, like a character like Bill Murray as her dad. Like, that's so awesome. But going to what you guys were talking about as character, I think something that struck me is that, you know, the, like Rosa was saying about the complexity of his character. And I guess, I don't know if I should save this for the spoilers, but just like the fact that I think, especially in today's society where everything is based off one thing, like the judgments, you know, like one tweet or whatever, you know, like so black and white, and something like, you know, his character and his backstory with that, you know, with the family. And when he, you know, when he's sitting with her and having these conversations, and it's not necessarily like you forgive him, and I'm sure she doesn't forgive him for what he's done, but it gives you like the backstory of it. And I think if it's coming from anybody else other than Bill Murray, you know, cause the things he's done is not forgivable, but he's trying to justify them, but you can at least understand where he's coming from. And I liked that. I like that about this movie is like, they're showing it's horrible things, right? Like, I mean, not horrible things, but like a cheating or whatever. And instead of just being like, oh, not being able to receive anything other than like, oh, that's bad. You know, it's like, well, maybe you should actually understand why. And she does ask him why, you know, and I thought that was very like, I don't know, striking that, you know, a father-daughter relationship and asking, you know, why you're doing that, or why you did that, and getting an honest answer and, you know, being like, I may still not like it, but it is what it is. And the way Bill Murray delivered that, you know, being honest and you kind of feel for him in a way, you know, you may not agree with him, but I think that was kind of sprinkled throughout the movie in those moments.
Yeah. And I think the idea that she can disagree with him and not like something about him or some aspects of him, but she still clearly wants him in his life or in her life, is just very emblematic of basically any familial relationship, right? You don't choose your family. And there are things that my family does that I dislike, but you don't even necessarily forgive them, but you want them around. Anyway, yeah. So I think it's a very realistic portrayal of a father-daughter relationship. And I'd be really interested to see, or know, I guess I could never actually see, but like to know the psyche of Sofia Coppola, who is obviously the daughter of Francis Ford Coppola, right? And
yeah, I feel like she was projecting maybe some things on here. Yeah. I don't know. I was hoping she was.
I mean, I feel like she projects in every single one of her movies. Yeah. There are so many characters in her movies that are like, that's you. You know that, right? And it's very on purpose. I want to get into spoilers here pretty quickly. But one thing I felt myself pushing back a little bit on these movies and also Sofia Coppola's movies in general are how she tends to, because writers often write what they know, and we know Sofia Coppola comes from a very prolific family of filmmakers, which means that they are obviously very well off. A lot of her films are very much about very successful, very famous, or at least quite wealthy individuals. And a lot of these people, they have all the ingredients for what we as like, you know, an average American might think is what should make for a happy life, right? You know, especially Rashida Jones in this movie, I think there's a whole point about, you know, she's got a loving husband and she has an amazing, probably incredibly expensive New York apartment and all of these things, and they're still sad. And then I think that's very similar to the Somewhere character, Johnny. He is this hugely successful actor, or Bill Murray in Lost in Translation, same thing, but they're clearly melancholic or not necessarily depressed, but uninspired or whatever. And I think sometimes that comes off a little bit like, hey, guess what? Rich people can be sad too. And that almost feels a little bit unimportant when you think of some of the other films, especially now that are coming out during this time, that are shed a light on these really fascinating stories from marginalized groups and lifestyles. And I don't know if you felt any of that, but I definitely felt myself pushing back a little bit in 2020 here, going like, okay, I don't know. It's a little hard to feel completely terrible for these people.
I guess, and I don't know if this is going to sound, maybe I don't know if it's gonna be bad in this sense either, but it's coming off of me and Russ. I recorded an episode, a review of The Crown, and I kind of the recent season about like I guess on the other side of that, because I'm not wealthy, you know, come from a hardworking family, and I got to work, you know, mm-hmm. to pay my bills mm-hmm. and stuff. And so I do not know, like, you know, when I'm sad, I still have to go to work, and, you know, I can't have the like things that maybe, you know, like what you're alluding to of like, hey, like you should continue. At least you don't have to go and like your livelihood's depending on you, even when you're sad, to have to go to work or whatever. Right.
Right.
I think of that. And I think I've been thinking, especially after like the crown and like these sort of things, is that it's not that it's comforting that other people are sad, but I think that it's like, it is what you make of it, you know? And I think like, in a way, you know, people aren't, I don't know, like it's sort of a thing, like it doesn't bother me as much as it did, I think, before, maybe because, you know, I think it's valid. And I don't think in this one she's showing like, it doesn't come off as like, you know, feel sorry for us or whatever. Right. I think it's just a portrait of who these characters are. But also knowing that like, you don't, having money, having everything, it seem like it's perfect. We've seen this like happen in all these, you know, different movies in real life. Like I've seen it in my real life too. Like, you know, the things that you think are going to make you happy, don't make you happy or make people happy. Right.
Right.
So I also find that from, I guess, coming not from a wealthy family, fascinating, because I am at my happiest right now, and I'm not a millionaire, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't know if that's answering your question, but I think like I understand maybe that's why she's kind of exploring that, because maybe she, I don't know what she's going through in her own life, but like she's probably seen, I'm guessing, you know, in the way she grew up around very, I guess, quote unquote, successful people, wealthy people, whatever. And then still seeing these people who maybe were not fulfilled when they have every ingredient to be fulfilled. Like, I don't mind her exploring that. To me, it doesn't come off as anything, you know, bad, because that's what she knows.
Right. And it might almost feel like disingenuous if she were to make a rags to riches story or something, because she, that's not her life. That's not her story. That's not what she knows. So that's a good point.
Yeah. Maybe she's trying to explore that too. Like of why, you know, and I don't know if it's from herself or people she knows, but like that thing, right? Like these people have, you have everything you need, like essentially need, right? Mm-hmm. But they're still not happy. And I think about that too. And you guys can go listen to our crown episode, cause I kind of just talked about that too. And that in a way of like, so I actually find it kind of fascinating, I guess.
Yeah. The thing I love about The Crown is that there's such trivial issues that like when you think about them on the surface level, you're just like, there's no way they can reap drama from this. And then you're watching it and you're like, oh my God, her dress is not the right color or whatever, you know,
yes.
I love The Crown, and I thought I was really not going to. And I'm so excited for season 4.
Sorry, I don't know if that even answered the question, but I'm intrigued by it. I didn't push back is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Rosa, do you have anything you want to say about that? Or
I entirely agree with what Catherine just said. And I think that I also didn't interpret it as being, oh yeah, rich people aren't happy either. Because it is true. not money doesn't necessarily isn't synonymous with happiness. It can be at times, but not entirely on different aspects of it. I didn't interpret it as such. And it was interesting to see, because you a lot of us who do come from low-income communities or just hardworking families, we, when they ask us, you know, what do you want in life, or what are you working towards, or what are some of your goals? And of course, economically speaking, you always think of money. You always think, oh yeah, I want to make more money. I want to have my own house. I want to have this. I want to have that. But we often forget about the other areas, that like family relationships and how do we better that, and or just other things that can help us also be happy. So yeah, I didn't interpret it as such either. Mm. And I also find it fascinating to view these dilemmas between people that are economically stable or middle class or higher middle class. Same thing. Perhaps this is coming because we just watched The Crown, and you know, royal families, and very similar. You know, it's at times we do have this stigma of, yeah, rich people. Well, yeah, rich people are having dilemmas, but same thing with family. Like you just said, we don't pick family. At times family is royalty, and at times family have money. Right. And that's how we grow up, you know? So it's something that we can't always be attacking, because then we have movies or shows that highlight poverty or such, then it's considered poverty porn. So then you get both, you're never half satisfied. So either way, yeah, I'm in the same boat as Kat. I didn't interpret it anything bad. And yes, go watch The Crown season 4.
This is now a Crown season 4 podcast. Yeah. I think this will actually be dropping the week after that anyways. So yeah, let's just talk about, no, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm so excited. So with that, let's go ahead and hop into spoilers and talk a little bit about the ending. Before we do that, Catherine, can you give me your score out of 10 and summarize any thoughts you have?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad film, and I think I enjoyed it. I'm going to say 7 out of 10. And overall thoughts, I think also maybe something that was, I'm going to watch it again because I think maybe the expectation is, and to her credit, Sofia Coppola's credit, is that I was expecting something that was going to like really take me aback and be, you know, it may be with the style or the boldness of her direction or, you know, something like that, like from the other ones. And I think this one might hit harder if I watch it again, just because maybe it's doing it a little, you know, as filmmakers, you know, go through their career, they also mature in different ways and they're not necessarily doing exactly what they've been doing, but the essence is there, the vibe is there. So I am actually curious to see if I maybe on the second viewing, whether it hits a little differently and I kind of find those nuances of, you know, the things that she does really well. And because I saw the hints of them and maybe I was just being a little too much. So that's kind of, I guess my overall thoughts, but I enjoyed it. I think it's a good one to watch on, you know, streaming.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and hop in before Rosa lowers our average and say that I agree. I think it's a really fun film and I think it's funny. I do think that after seeing it a second time, I noticed some little ticks and things that are, I thought, very well done. I think there are very specific points in the film where Sofia Coppola is just so good at showing the absurdity and mundanity of things like parenthood and domesticity. And just like, you know, she has Rashida Jones using a label maker to procrastinate. Mm-hmm. She has a Roomba running into a wall over and over again. All these little tiny things I think are nice little touches that make this a little bit better than kind of the run of the mill, you know, indie comedy sort of thing. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. But same reasons as what Kat is saying. So Rosa, take it away.
Absolutely. No, it's funny now that I'm thinking about it because we're completely opposites from the previous episode. I was more of the more of the supporter of the Mulan, and now I'm being a little the little villain here. Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 6 out of 10. Yeah, it's a film. I thought it was just okay. It's visually nice to look at and such, but it's a story that I frankly don't care seeing again. Bill Murray makes this film watchable to me, and only him. So yeah, just 6 out of 10. I don't see myself watching this film again. It's nicely made, nicely done, nicely told, paced and everything, but just not my cup of tea, I guess.
Perfectly fair. So with that, let's go ahead and take a break here, and when we return, we'll hop into spoilers.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world. All through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
All right, we're back and talking about spoilers for On the Rocks starting now.
That's my secret, Cat. I'm always angry.
So not a lot of spoilers for this movie, really. Just a couple things that I thought were kind of interesting. I think that the part where she follows her husband to Mexico to spy on him is an absolutely psychopathic thing to do. I think she is not dragged for that nearly enough. That is so crazy to do that.
Yeah, it is. And also, I guess that would be the one thing that would be the privileged part of like, oh, I just have the money to go to Mexico and take a vacation.
Yeah. And I mean, it's very clear that part of this whole thing is she likes the thrill of hanging out with her dad, and it's kind of pulling her out of the rut that's in her life. So I understand it as like a, you know, metaphorical thing to spice up her life or whatever. But it just is objectively insane to leave your children to go spy on your husband instead of just confronting him about it. But it makes for a fun scene. I like everything with Bill Murray in Mexico. And I think that the reveal that Marlon Wayans is, of course, not actually cheating on her, he's just kind of really busy, I guess, is the takeaway from that. I like that twist. I don't totally love how it kind of absolves him of blame for having a pretty meh relationship. I know that's a common complaint in this movie. Rosa, what were your thoughts on that and how that kind of comes together at the end?
Yeah, my biggest issue with the film was the ending, how he was cheating, but they're telling me he isn't. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting to for him to actually be having an affair. I was actually hoping for something, I don't know, something different or a little twist that he was having an affair, but with somebody else and not necessarily her, the coworker. I don't know. I just wanted something to like just throw me back or something. But yeah, I wasn't particularly fond of the ending. It felt very convenient. And I'm a big fan of cliche and such, but this felt like far too much for me. But yeah, the trip to Mexico, I was like, oh, okay, I guess. It wasn't, again, to me, it's more of the relationship between her and Bill Murray's character and how, and it's pretty much the driven narrative here to me. I to be honest, I could care less about her marriage and and what was going on. To me, it was more of the dynamic between her and her father.
So do you think that relationship and kind of the conflict between her and her father, do you think that's resolved well?
I think so. I think so, because at the end of the day, you know, as a parent, you do want to hold on to your kids and you want to have this relationship, but you just got to let them go and do their own lives. And that little ending between them two, I was good with. I really liked it because it ended how, to me, in my opinion, of course, how it was supposed to end, just like got to let her have her family, live her life and do her own family and just let her live. Of course, not completely like isolating or neglecting his father, but for her to make that decision to not act like her husband was and neglecting the family. And so I was pretty good with that.
Okay. So Catherine, how about you? Did you think that the kind of not finale of the finale or the anticlimactic reveal that he wasn't cheating, do you think that worked for you, or do you feel like Rosa, where it was a little like it was a little convenient?
I think it was a little bit convenient, but I guess I'm maybe gonna play the other side a little bit, just because it's something that I connected with in the sense of, I guess I've been married like almost 6 years now, but I don't have kids, so I can't talk about that part. The way they depicted the relationship, kind of like just going not through the motions, but like, you know, it does become very mundane in sometimes, and you have to like catch yourself before, you know, like they did with them, like where if you are feeling a little lost, or she was procrastinating because she didn't want to do her, you know, she felt like she wasn't good enough for her book, you know, to write her book, and then you start interpreting, you know, signs that maybe aren't there, or, you know, maybe they are there, I don't know. And then you have someone egging you on, like your father, and leaning into your, you know, family relationship and that kind of thing. I have to say I related to some of that. Like there are times like I'm actually been like the Marlon Wayans character where I've been so busy, you know, like full-time job, and then I schedule a million podcasts to do like this one. And then, you know, I take sort of not for granted my husband, but like, you know, sometimes I'll be like, hey, like, you know, I would tell him like, oh yeah, I'm doing this and this and this. And then it's sort of like, you just expect them to, I mean, obviously they support you and everything, but I think you also have to just like check in and, with them, what I got most from both these relationships, the father and daughter, and then the, you know, husband wife thing, is communicate. And I think, you know, when Bill Murray's character is telling Rashida, I don't know their character name, sorry. Rashida Jones's character, about like, you know, why he cheated on his wife. And basically the whole thing was like, I felt neglected. And it's like, I wanted to scream like, well, did you tell her? Like, did you tell your wife like how you felt? You know, because then if you don't tell someone how you feel, especially in a partnership, how are they going to fix it? Maybe she didn't know she was paying too much attention to the kids, you know, and then like you didn't even give her a chance to resolve it. You just went and did that. And that's the bad part, you know, not necessarily cheating. It's like you didn't even give her a chance to make it better. And then I think with their relationship, the marriage, it's also that like he was thinking something that she wanted and she was thinking something else. And then it got a little out of hand. It's like, I guess moral of the story, and it's also something I try to do, especially when I overbook myself, and like, it's just, you know, you got to communicate with your partner and make sure, you know, you're just, I don't know. Sorry. That's a long story to say that I didn't mind the ending, because in some ways, it's not all like, you know, the rom-coms make it feel like. Sometimes those are just, you get through your problems and then you're like, okay, cool. And then you have those moments. So mm-hmm. to me, it felt more like real life, and it wasn't, I guess, the most cinematic ending, like a rom-com, but those don't really happen. So like, I don't know. I felt like, oh yeah, that's how it works. Like, you know, when I have to make up or do something like that, and that's how it plays out. So I felt like it was very true to real life in that sense of like the marriage depiction and the way it played out.
Yeah. I think I largely agree with you, Catherine. I always find that infidelity, especially in television shows, which this is not one, but just as an example, I feel like it's often used as a very convenient way to add drama or conflict to a marriage or a relationship or whatever. When in fact, marriage and relationship, a lot of conflicts are a lot more benign mm-hmm. than that, right? You know, somebody isn't paying attention to the other person and somebody isn't doing this thing, or there's a lack of communication or whatever. And so I tend to not like when infidelity is like the main plot yeah. point of why a relationship ends, especially like in a TV show. And so I really did enjoy that this was, it turns out that he wasn't cheating, because I feel like if it was him cheating, then it would just validate everything that Bill Murray was saying about how mm-hmm. men are wired to try and sleep with every female they have, and almost Bill Murray saying that as like an excuse for his own behavior, that it's like, oh, it's not my personal fault. It's how nature made me. So I yeah. really like that he wasn't cheating. The thing that I guess what I wanted the film to do a little bit better with was the conversation between Marlon Wayans and Rashida Jones at the end. Mm-hmm. And Marlon Wayans does kind of apologize, but the film does sort of, in my opinion, I think shows it more as like Rashida Jones just kind of losing her way and not being confident in her relationship, and the suspicions were wrong, but it doesn't really address the fact that her suspicions came from, it was a symptom of not feeling valued in her marriage, which is equally his responsibility. And I just wish that there was a little more commentary on that, of like a reminder for the Marlon Wayans character, almost like, hey, you need to be a good husband, because otherwise she's not going to feel valued. And so I don't know. I thought for that reason, it was just a little too pat. But I think overall, I think that the ending, it lands better than how I think most people are interpreting the ending.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, it almost seems like if they would have added, but then it would have been a different story, right? Because mm-hmm. I think she was really mm-hmm. just focusing on the father-daughter thing. And I almost thought like, yeah, just adding that little like nuance, because I also think it borderlined the cheating aspect, which I think like also I don't like, because I think that is like probably the last thing that happens towards, you know, in like relationships, at least like, I don't know. I mean, it hasn't happened in mine, but I'm just saying like in general, like there's so many other things, like you said, in relationships that are just more drama filled and they're not based around infidelity.
Right.
I think like it was kind of annoying to see like those signs. And then I almost think that the thing I didn't like was that, I don't want to, it almost seemed like it was going to invalidate people who do have suspicions, and it does end up like being the cheating and being like, you feel like you're crazy, which is like the crazy woman stereotype. Like right. even when he said like, oh, stalker, you know, cause you went to Mexico, which was valid, cause that was a little too much. But, I think that borderline, like, I didn't like that because it did make her seem like she was a little crazy when, I mean, her dad was egging her on, you know, but like, I don't know. I think, yeah, everything that you just said, like their relationship was not as nuanced as it should have been to kind of have the payoff. And maybe that's why people aren't interpreting it. If, especially if they're single and not married and don't know, like, or haven't been in relationships and stuff like that, it could land a little bit like, that's it. And it was like, yeah, that's it. Unfortunately, like it's the real life.
Yeah, maybe maybe part of that is that there is kind of this dichotomy between the marriage stuff. Like, it's like half of Marriage Story, but then also mixed with this father-daughter, more typical rom-com, kind of exploring that relation thing. So maybe if she had focused on one of them instead of trying to merge the two, it would have been a more coherent mm-hmm. ending. I don't know. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about?
I was just interested and more of a... just curious to know if I mean, this is a Sofia Coppola film, but yet this is only my introduction to her filmography. So I'm just curious to know, where would this rank, like, between all her filmography?
That's a great question. Catherine, do you want to take that first?
No pressure, but your answers might persuade me whether or not I should go ahead and watch her filmography.
Well, I think I don't know if I'm a big fan of ranking, but I think that you definitely should see the progression of how she got to this point, because mm-hmm. I think it, like I said, I think it's very interesting. Like from the bold, like Virgin Suicides, and then like Marie Antoinette and the Bling Ring and stuff like that, like seeing that and then seeing this one that's, I guess, in a way is more toned down, but it's still like, now that I think about like all the, you know, the marriage aspect and then the father-daughter relationship, like I think it's just a different tone for her and maybe where she wants to explore. And, you know, a lot of the other films that she did, especially early on, like the ones I mentioned, she was like a young, you know, I think she, I don't know how old she was when she did, like probably like late 20s or something, and exploring that. And so I don't necessarily want to rank it, just because I think watch the progression of it. Mm-hmm. Because it's easy to say like, oh, this one didn't hit as hard as the other ones, and then say that it's like ranked last. But I don't think that's a fair representation of her filmography to say that. So I think like, I highly recommend all those other films I mentioned, because they're really good and they were, they still are very striking to me. And they have stuck with me. At least like the Virgin Suicides and also Marie Antoinette's one of my favorites, you know, period pieces, and it's done really well. So you would love it, because, you know, we love period and royalty. So I guess all of that is to say, I'm not going to rank it, and definitely go watch those.
Well, that's incredibly awkward, because next week I am ranking all of David Fincher's films. But I think what you have, or what you said, is a great point, and I agree with that.
Yeah, I just don't want to judge her filmography or be discouraged to watch it just because of my thoughts on this film. So yeah, that's why I was just asking. No.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not against ranking, guys, but I am just mean like, I want you to not.
How dare you?
Yeah. I want you to go watch the earlier ones, and I would really love to hear what you think about that, because I think it's a very different tone, but the same, like, I don't know, there's going to be some similarities, obviously, if it's, you know, same, it's her. So, just please go watch that. Don't be dissuaded by this one.
Yeah, and I would definitely say you should absolutely at least check out Lost in Translation, just because it's kind of a seminal text in a lot of ways. And I found that I was very, like, I really enjoyed it despite having pretty high expectations, which doesn't usually happen when you go back to a film that kind of particularly Film Twitter really, really loves, you know? And I thought, in contrast to this one, the ending of that film just makes everything that you experience so effective. And I think it really shows how Sofia Coppola is really good at getting these, like, capturing these moments in time almost, and these moments in place. And I mean, she does that in Marie Antoinette and all of these other things that are in more period pieces, but just like capturing Tokyo, capturing the 2000s in a way, and also having a relationship between an old Bill Murray and a young Scarlett Johansson, and somehow that relationship should be creepy, but it isn't, I think is just a real testament to what she's able to do with like these character and emotional moments. So I think that's a really good one to kind of get like a quick and dirty sense of her style, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to rank it, because I think it doesn't, for your purpose, it's not going to give you the best representation of I think Maddie's right. Go watch Lost in Translation.
Also, The Bling Ring is really underrated. I really enjoyed that.
Emma Watson, and that was amazing.
I love that it basically, it's almost like a Martin Scorsese film. I don't want to get off on a huge side tangent, but just how it is able to say what Wolf of Wall Street said in half the runtime, I think more people should watch that one too. Okay, so with that, let's go ahead and move on to our point two section where we talk about some of the other stuff that we've been watching. I'll throw it to Catherine first. What have you been watching?
Yes. Since I don't want to make it a Crown episode, I have watched season four of The Crown. So yes. But I actually recently I watched Seduced Inside the NXIVM Cult. That's on Stars. And I think there were, I forgot what the other one, the same NXIVM based documentary that's on HBO Max as well, or HBO. And so I've watched, but it's kind of, it reminded me of like,
I think it's called
The Vow. Yeah. And it reminded me of like, I'm really into documentaries. And then I love these opposing doc, or not opposing, but like these two documentaries, like kind of like the Fyre Festival with Hulu and Netflix that have both had Fyre documentaries. And this one, I was a big fan of Smallville. So like the Allison Mack involvement is just fascinating to me and very intriguing, and like I can understand like how, and just the cult aspect too, and like how these people are, you know, I don't know, hearing them talk about how they got kind of brainwashed and why they did it and all that. It was really fascinating. So I finished that. And yeah, I'm gonna move on to now cheesy holiday rom-coms and but that was my
perfect pair of those two, right? Like a sex cult and then a classic cheesy holiday film.
Yeah those go together for the holiday season, exactly. Right, I know that's kind of dark, but that's what I'm watching. So if you're into kind of, you know, if you followed that story when it broke and are curious to learn more about who this guy was and all that, like watch both of those series. It still doesn't answer a lot of the questions and still really hard to understand from an outsider perspective. But I think at least you get to listen to the victims and give them at least, I always think of like, I should hear their stories too, you know, that's important.
Would you recommend one over the other?
I would say just because it is similar to the Fyre Festival situation with the opposing docs where they had different angles to it. Like, not necessarily like the bias or whatever, but they had different subjects that were participated in the documentary. So I feel like they're kind of, and to their, I guess, I don't know if they do this on purpose, but it's kind of, you need to watch both because you get, and I felt the same way with these NXIVM docs, is the HBO one is sort of following these certain characters as it's playing out, like the person had just left. And like, I think they followed him over a few years, you know, that story. And then the Seduced that's on Stars is the aftermath. So actually one of the people who, one of the person that was involved in the cult is actually telling her story in the Stars one, mostly with a few other people, but she was in the HBO one, her mom is, you know, basically like she's still in it during that documentary. So it's kind of like, I feel like they complement each other. Like if you watch the Vow one first, it's as it's happening and people are getting out, and then you'll watch like, oh, why, you know, the one of the subjects that was in The Vow is like, you know, why she was doing that and stuff. So I think it's eerily complimenting in a way.
Cool. Did you want to talk cheesy rom-coms?
Oh yeah. I'll recommend a few that I watched. I watched The Holidate, with Emma Roberts and I forgot what his name is. I think Luke something, he's Australian. And it's on Netflix, and I actually found it to be, you know, Netflix has been coming out with these, Christmas movies for a few years now. Like the infamous ones are
the Princess Swap or something. The double,
there's like the Royal Trilogy, which shouldn't have gone to
A Christmas Prince, I think.
Yes. Christmas Prince. And Holidate felt like it was a little bit more raunchy, which I didn't expect, which is okay. I think that played to it. And I liked like Emma Roberts' character, you know, they're basically kind of like, oh, we need a, the premise is, you know, they need a date for all the holidays. And of course they end up like liking each other and blah, blah, blah. But like the way they, they do it is like, I don't know, it felt like very reminiscent of probably how it is today, you know, and sometimes like the cheesy rom-coms are very fluffy, you know, and that's not actually how it plays out. And just to give you a little bit of context, like of what I'm trying to get at is like, there's a moment where she accidentally takes a laxative and has to like go through, you know, like have to get home to, you know, let it out. And he's with, you know, the love interest is there too, or whatever the guy. And like, that is real stuff. And I love when like in rom-coms, it's like kind of, you know, these are the moments that are actually going to happen. You know, you're going to have to get acquainted with your person's, you know, stuff like that. And I like seeing that, I guess. I don't know if I'm weird, but I liked it. It was fun. I'm in the middle of watching Operation Christmas Drop, and that's with Cat Graham and Alexander Ludwig. And I'm saying I'm in the middle of it just because it's not cringy, but I know it's going to happen. And then I'm just thinking like, they are filming probably at like the actual, like they, you know, at a base where, you know, it's actually a real thing that happens. I read that the military, I think they're like in Guam or something. They deliver things to the like islands that are very secluded or whatever. But she's, you know, going there because they're going to close the base or whatever. And then they end up, you know, probably getting together. I haven't finished, but it is a little cheesy. And I'm just thinking like, oh my God, were you filming around actual military people, like this cheesy rom-com Netflix movie? And that makes me cringe. And so it's just, I've paused a little bit a few times, but I'm going to finish it because I love it. So yeah, those are the two I've watched. And then I want to watch Jingle Jangle that just came out, and the Christmas Chronicles too. And so there's a lot in my future. And I don't know. Do you watch Christmas movies as well?
I'll do like one or two a year maybe, but I think some of them are really great, and they have like a place, you know. It's almost like, I don't want to say guilty pleasure watch, because that sort of diminishes them in a way, because like you shouldn't feel guilty for watching something that you enjoy, but they are just nice to turn on as like almost like a television sitcom, right, where you don't really have to think too hard about it. And the one with Vanessa Hudgens, I think, is the Princess Switch. That one is absolutely bananas, and I can't shake the thing that was craziest about it for me was that in that movie they're watching a Netflix original movie in their cabin, and the princess, the Christmas Prince or something, and I was this is a little offensive, but I definitely like them. I'll definitely pass those recommendations on and check them out.
Yeah.
So that's Holiday and Operation Christmas Drop, both on Netflix, as well as Seduced on Stars.
Yes.
Okay. So Rosa, similarly, religious cults and Christmas musicals, or
no? Sorry to disappoint. It's mainly I've been just watching a lot of screeners. I've been trying to catch up, but with a lot of Academy potentially worthy films. I'm just going to talk briefly about two films that I've been watching. The first one is I Carry You With Me. It has a release date for January next year, which probably seems like years from now. But it follows a Mexican chef who wants to be a chef, but he is working through chef school, culinary school, and everything, but it follows him and his journey to becoming a chef. So he comes to the United States, to New York, and just pursuing his dream. So it's an immigrant story slash social commentary about Mexico's social mental homophobia themes and such, because the main character is gay, but he has a son, so he has to deal with that and trying to raise a son in a society that pretty much hates him for who he is. So he falls in love. It's a really beautiful love story, to be honest. It's one of my favorite films of the year. And what happens between them and what happens after he immigrates to New York, and it's one of those films that I have no idea how they were able to achieve this, but it's a film, but they were able to intertwine it with the documentary format, because it's based on real events. So throughout the film, you see the two real people that are actually experiencing this. And you see them throughout the film. So it's like a film slash documentary-esque kind of movie that's really well done, well acted. Great performances all around. And hopefully, I think it's one of the contenders to be Mexico's representative for international film for the Academy Awards. Yeah.
Is it like American Animals? Did you see that? Where that's sort of like semi-documentary, but also a narrative story?
I don't think I've seen it, so okay. I'm not sure.
Okay, just curious.
Yeah, sorry. but yes, and so if you guys get a chance to see it, please watch it. It's really, really great. And the last film, it's a film I just recently watched last night, and it's Sound of Metal.
You sound great.
Yeah, right.
What, you're telling me you weren't feeling it? You were in it.
We don't need to put them all out.
I know, but we just need to film.
Your hearing is deteriorating rapidly.
We'll come back. Till then, Lou, we just keep going, okay?
No.
Lou,
no.
Let's play them all and see what it's like, okay? I'm gonna be like a click track. You can play to me.
You have to understand, your first responsibility is to preserve the hearing you have.
Oh my gosh.
I'm seeing that on Tuesday.
Oh, great. You're going to, I mean, I hope you love this film. I had a blast with this movie. Every critical acclaim that Riz Ahmed is getting, wholeheartedly, I support it. Man, his performance in this film is very, very powerful. And just to see the journey, he plays a drummer who slowly but surely is losing his hearing. So, and for a musician, I can't imagine what it's like for anyone in particular, but for a musician himself. And you just see his journey and what he goes through. And beautifully acted also by, supported by Olivia Cooke, who gives a really good performance. I wouldn't be surprised if she gets some acclaim for her performance as well. Overall, just a well-done film. I just love the story, love the character development between both of them. And I really hope you enjoy it, because it's certainly one of those films that surprised me. I was not expecting to like it this much. And I currently hold a huge crush on Riz Ahmed. Oh my gosh.
Riz Ahmed, I have stanned Riz Ahmed since I think I first saw him in Nightcrawler, but then he had The Night Of, which is amazing, an amazing HBO miniseries if you haven't seen that. So good. And then, of course, you know, he was in Rogue One. And I mean, I guess he was also in Venom, but whatever.
Venom, yeah.
but yeah, I'm so excited for this one. I believe it's an Amazon release, so it should come onto Amazon sometime relatively soon. But I get to see a virtual screening on Tuesday, so I'm super excited for that one.
Yay!
Okay, and so then I Carry You With Me, I believe, is a Sony Classics release, correct?
Correct, yes.
So that should come onto VOD sometime in January, hopefully. Or if we're lucky, right, maybe we can go to a theater. But really excited for both of those. Okay, so the films that I want to talk about, I think that this was all the rage online, maybe, you know, 4 weeks too late, I guess, at this point. But I want to talk just briefly about Borat. Subsequent movie film. Is this one that you guys saw?
No, I'm not a very big fan of the comedy is like a weird thing for me. And I think it'll take me a long time to probably watch. I haven't even seen the first Borat, if that answers your question.
Okay.
No, I'm not opposed to it. It's just not for me, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And Rosa, how about you?
I haven't seen the first one, therefore, I don't watch sequels, I don't.
Yeah, so I remember watching the first one, like, when I was a kid, back when it was kind of all the craze, and I really didn't like it, which I think is weird for a child to not like Borat, I don't know. But this is obviously the sequel, and just for people who are uninitiated, Sacha Baron Cohen is pretending to be this journalist from Kazakhstan, and he basically goes to America and essentially runs all these elaborate pranks on Americans. And it's kind of to expose the ridiculousness of our culture and also the especially now, not so latent biases that people have and are more than comfortable with sharing, which is a bit frustrating and a bit tragic. And I think that's part of the kind of hesitation, I think, with the second one, is that, like, do we really need Borat coming around and having people show their racism so clearly when it's already so clearly shown? But this is the second film, I think, is interesting because it was strategically made to be released right before the election, and it has a very specific political message. And I think, unlike the first one, which is kind of let's hit everyone and make fun of everyone, this one very much focuses its efforts on conservatives and Republicans and really looks at those individuals and kind of challenges those people. Or I guess maybe challenge isn't the right word, because it's not for those people, but it kind of hits those people. And I think the film is really funny. It's definitely a specific type of humor. But there were several moments that did make me just absolutely laugh out loud. And there's a new player in the game. It's Maria Bakalova, who plays his daughter. And so she's basically doing the same thing. And it's amazing that, you know, it's not just Sacha Baron Cohen, who we know is kind of a genius at this point, but she's also committed to the character and never breaks and can keep up with him during these elaborate pranks. And I just think I really like that the film has something to say. It's very smartly interwoven with the COVID crisis in a way that I think is funny and silly, but it's not disrespectful, which I think is certainly something that could come off, you know, as like playing it for laughs or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think just some of the pranks that he's able to get away with, and I don't really want to share them or even give examples, but, you know, I think if you've been online, there's a particular very prominent political figure that is shown in a very poor light in this movie. And it's just staggering that he's able to do this and continue to do this. But I guess the one thing that I'll say is that even at 96 minutes, it definitely feels long. And this is one of those types of comedies that I think that the premise becomes pretty belabored very quickly. And there's like certain bits and jokes that are not nearly as good as others. So it kind of feels exhausting after 90 minutes, even though I did largely enjoy myself. But the reason that I say that is because afterwards, I also watched the entire first season of Who is America? Have you heard of this show, either of you?
Wait, say it. Sorry, say it again.
It's called Who is America?
Oh, no, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, so this is also Sacha Baron Cohen, and it's a Showtime television show where he, again, disguises himself as a range of different characters and then gets interviews with people across the United States. And, you know, you get a range of people. Some of them are complete unknown people. So one of the things that he does is he goes to a town hall in Arizona, which is where I'm from. So it was particularly damning to see some of the people there act the way that they did. But then he also gets like these interviews as pretending to be a person with people like Dick Cheney and Bernie Sanders. And so like he has these interactions in character with these people. And as far as I can tell, they are none the wiser. And what I really like about this is that unlike the films, these are 30-minute episodes. So you get these quick bits, but they don't really overstay their welcome. It kind of hits everybody, but the best bits are usually against the people that voted for Trump, for example, or to the people that most likely did. So I think it's like a good response to that. And it may even be more palatable now that hopefully that part is behind us. But it's on Showtime, and I would recommend it as like a quick burst of comedy and this type of thing without having to commit to like a whole 90 minutes of a film. But yeah, so that's Who is America, which is on Showtime, and Borat subsequent movie film, I think, is the short title, and that is on Amazon Prime. Okay, so this has been our review of On the Rocks. Rosa, Catherine, thanks again for joining me. I think it's always a blast to have you both on, and I think we had some really great conversation and hopefully convinced Rosa to check out some of Sofia Coppola's films, hopefully.
Yeah, I'll probably be seeking out some of her films, but we'll see.
Yeah. Is there anything specific that you'd like to plug here?
Yeah, if you want to listen to more conversations with me and Rosa, join us on Latinx Lens. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and everywhere you listen to podcasts.
I will be tuning in for that season 4 Crown Love Fest. I think that sounds great.
Yes. Sounds oh my God. Great. It's such a love fest. It might be, it's like an hour of annoying, just love fest, but sorry, not sorry.
I think those are the best when you agree with the hosts, right? Like if you hated the Crown, which I don't know why you would watch season 4 of the Crown at that point, if you hate the show, but, yeah. I'm all on the Crown board. So, okay.
Yes.
The intro music for this episode is a piece called Work by Kevin MacLeod, and you can find more of his work at incompetech.com. If you'd like to keep up with this podcast and find out when we release new episodes, you can follow us on Twitter at MovieMaraPod or on Facebook at facebook.com/MovieMaraPod. That's Movie M-A-R-A Pod. And you can always reach out to us at our email, MovieMarathonersPod@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast at our website, evergreenpodcasts.com/movie-marathoners. And we are also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Overcast, Himalaya, and CastBox. So please subscribe or write a review if you like what we're doing. And any feedback you have to help improve the podcast is always appreciated. So thank you all for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next time when I'm joined by James and Kyle from Munson's at the Movies to talk about our favorite Fincher films in preparation for the highly anticipated release of Mank. Rose, I'm assuming you've seen Mank already. Is it good? I think everybody's saying it's good.
It's good. It's visually beautiful. I thought it was okay. Here we go again. But it's certainly targeted to a certain niche film demographic. So if you're very like cinephile and very big on film history, this Mank is certainly going to be for them. I don't think it's going to have the same impact on regular movie and audience.
Got it. Okay, well, fingers crossed, and I'll have a review for that one as well. So stay tuned for all that. Until then, remember that life's a marathon, so let's take it one movie at a time.
You've watched them in unforgettable adventures, love affairs, and tragedies. Now it's time to hear their own remarkable stories. From the makers of Death of a Rockstar and Death of a Sports Star, this is Death
Ready.
Of a Film Star.
And action.
Starring Heath Ledger, Marilyn Monroe, Chadwick Boseman, Robin Williams, Carrie Fisher, and Bruce Lee. Search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app. You've seen them tell stories. Now it's time to tell theirs.